Yo everyone, welcome to episode 20, and I can't believe I'm saying episode 20. Where has the time gone?
Where's it gone? Getting old, man.
I'm Michael Behane and I'm with
Abba Jesse.
Yep. So the first story we want to start with had us both cracking up. It is the I don't know if anyone's seen it, but it's the Azealia Banks and Elon Musk story, which
the
I
most
never thought,
techish story we've ever had.
Yeah, you know, there's like there's certain names that you never would ever expect to be like in the same headline.
So true.
Like, how did this happen? So I had to delve in a bit more. So do you want to give the background? Wow, like what you know about it.
So in previous episodes of Techish, we talked about Elon Musk's Twitter storm threatening to, I don't know if threatens the right word, but you know, he was talking about taking Tesla private, which is already publicly trading. Suddenly this story breaks that Azealia Banks, the rapper, controversial figure in the music scene and black culture, was invited to Elon's house by his girlfriend, also a female musician, Grimes. But the storm broke out because she felt that she was taken there under false pretenses. Mm. She was invited to jam, make music, hang out. But what Elon was really looking for were investors, high net worth individuals, to basically help him take Tesla private again.
So did she overhear that? Or was she... Like, she obviously she wasn't brought there to be an investor. She like did she overhear him talking to investors? Like, what was the setup? You know,
I think what happened was she was at the crib, mm-hmm. chilling as it were, and she felt that he was not focused on chilling and socializing, but rather scrambling. I think the word that she used was scrambling.
Wow.
So she thought she was invited for, you know, some hangouts, some chill sessions, but instead it was just chaos.
So this was after
she witnesses a genius in chaos mode, panic mode.
Genius, right?
Obviously, Tesla deny all the claims.
So from what I heard, so this is set after he put out that tweet about we're going private, right?
Mm.
Now, I think why it's controversial is because he claimed that he had the funding already set up to go private.
Yeah.
So she's claiming, if everyone at home is keeping up, that when she got to his crib, he was still... like floundering around trying to get the money set up, right?
Exactly.
And why it's so interesting
so
is
he's
because...
He's been fronting.
And also, mm-hmm. I think it would... I don't know if it's illegal, but the SEC...
Mm.
You're not allowed to do... I think like there's something where if he hadn't had the funding set up prior, he could be in trouble with the SEC. I don't understand why. Yeah, so this is why it's more of an interesting news story than I thought. But you know what I love though? Like, so I read the article on Business Insider about it, and they were focusing around like, does he really have the investors lined up? And then I went on Hypebeast and they were talking about the fact that she claimed that she was brought there for a threesome, basically.
For what?
For a threesome.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, so she, on one of her Instagram stories, she was like, yo, I've been brought here. Like, you know, they told me not to bring my boyfriend. I think they were on like some threesome freaky shit. Like, and I don't know about this. I feel like I'm in Get Out. And she claimed that he was tweeting on acid. Yeah,
she
you didn't
was.
Know that. She know that Elon was tweeting.
Oh
on
wow!
Acid.
But yo, everyone's microdosing in the valley.
Yeah,
everyone's
maybe
microdosing out there. Maybe he macrodosed that day. What I think is hilarious is the fact that okay, there's just so many things that don't make sense. So she arrived on Friday.
Yeah.
She left on Sunday. So Azealia spends the whole weekend at Musk's crib. Now she's saying that he spent the whole weekend instead of entertaining her as was intended or suggested with the invite. Scrambling around, I mean, you know, to quote, with his dick tucked in his ass cheeks.
Bro, she was like, she was
scrambling
so
to cover his butt for that tweet he sent out, basically trying to find investors.
Yeah.
And she's saying that she felt that she was invited to be hosted by them, but they pretty much spent the whole weekend in hiding. What I love is that she didn't leave. Because
at one
point from Friday to Sunday, did it become apparent that priorities had changed?
But she flew out
Elon
there, right, though?
Busy.
She's from New York, so she flew out to the valley, right? So she's thinking,
she
I ain't bouncing.
Like,
yeah, this is my shit. You
and
know
to be
saying?
Fair, his house is probably like Disneyland.
Ginormous.
It's going to be like movie theater. Swimming pools.
Yeah.
He probably has a zoo.
You could,
Michael Jackson style.
Trust
maybe.
Me, he probably got bubbles as well, like the chimpanzee. Like,
yeah,
kind of,
planetarium.
You know those ones where like...
I want an invite.
I'm still thinking from a poor person's perspective. Where I'm like, how can you go to someone's house and not see them? But you're right. If you're super rich, I could easily go to your crib and never run into you like once.
Exactly.
Oh, Lord.
It's not like our houses.
This is one of my favorite stories, actually. I love this.
So if anyone else has any...
We need to get her for an interview. We need to get her for an interview.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
Azealia, listen, I know you don't want to go on the Business Insider podcast or on these pompous, like, you know, predominantly white tech publications. Come on, our shit. Break it down for us, please. Like, we want the room. bleaching and how like she, yeah. she just kind of was like, well, you know, like people tan and, you know, people have wigs and stuff like that. Because when someone makes that argument, it's how do you combat that? But at the same time, we all know in our hearts of hearts, it's just wrong what you're doing. It's obviously come from self-hate. And those other things may also come from self-hate.
Yeah, but we don't know that. We don't know that. I think one of the things that I've recently started reading up on a bit more is this idea of like misogyny noir. So we already know that misogyny is like, you know, mistreatment and hatred of women. And when we look at things through the intersectional lens and understand that actually white women and black women experience the world very differently, then you realize that there's also, you know, misogyny noir. I'll try and find the name of the academic that coined
the term.
This term. Queer black feminist Moya Bailey. And what we're saying there, what she's saying there is that black women are like even more criticized because in patriarchy, it's already like not good enough to be a woman. But if you're a black woman, it's even harder. And I think that's like one of the struggles with Azealia Banks, because yes, she is a controversial figure. She has said transphobic and homophobic things as well, which I obviously do not condone. And then with the lightening of the skin, that fell into the colorism debate, because in the black community, we talk a lot about the fact that there's light skin privilege because of white supremacy. I have light skin privilege. I'm a mixed race person. And many darker skinned black women felt very hurt by the fact that she was very openly bleaching her skin and basically saying that that lighter skin is better. But going back to the Elon story, what's really interesting is that we now have this whole like he said, she said thing, because Elon's people are denying that she's even met him. That's basically how the article closes. So it's like, oh, they didn't even meet. And she's now just like, I'm being gaslighted.
Yeah,
because
completely.
It's like, they're making me out to look like the crazy, angry black woman, but I was there.
And I think it's like, the fact that Elon's got his people to say it to me, makes him. It look as if he's chatting shit. Because Elon is not shy to go on Twitter and be like, yo, this is what happened. I never met this person. The fact that his people have to speak is obviously an indication that they've got something to hide. And they're like, Elon, damage limitation. Don't say nada, basically,
exactly.
Right? But yeah, even to be honest, you know how you're saying she said a lot of transphobic stuff? Like even on the kind of IG story or Snapchat story, which she wrote, she said some hella flagrant thing. She was like, oh, he looks like he's autistic or he's on a spectrum. Like, yeah, like I was just like, come on, man. How are you going to be saying this shit? The only other thing that I found funny is that she started like really lambasting his background. She was like, oh, like, you know, his family made their money in South Africa during apartheid. I think they made their money through mining. Emeralds or something. How she knew this, maybe she was reading his Wikipedia page while she was waiting for him to think. Like, I don't know if she knew all this stuff before she met him or tried to meet him. So amongst all the rubbish that she said in terms of, you know, autism and stuff like that, there was a few like savvy political statements about how much we uplift this one individual and don't take into account like actually this guy is a white South African whose family wasn't impoverished during apartheid. So like to a certain extent, has he, and she's like, what's he ever done for Africa? Like, do you see what I mean? Like, this is that's your
he's
home
done
continent
stuff for the world.
I agree. Oh, now we've got role reversal here. Now you're defending Elon and I'm criticizing what's going on here.
No, like, I'm just trying to provide an objective perspective on the show.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, great story. I found that so fun.
Let's talk about Bumble.
All right, cool. Yeah,
Bumble's been in the news a lot, so shout out Bumble. I was in a relationship before I had the opportunity to use the dating service, but there's Bumble BFF, which helps
you
find friends. Is that how you met?
No. Moving on.
So, you know, we all know Bumble. Whitney Wolf Heard, probably one of the most famous female founders. She left Tinder, her previous employer, under quite dramatic circumstances, ended up suing them for sexual harassment. They then probably, I think, tried to sue her at some point for taking features.
Yeah.
Anyway, she's now owned by Badoo, Russian technology company. As far as tech brands go, probably one of the strongest, especially considering how young the company is, relatively speaking. You see Bumble all over everything. They're really strong in terms of doing media and partnerships. I have friends that work at Bumble, full disclosure. I know the team quite well here in London. They're all really cool. Majority female run as well, which is awesome.
Do you use their business networking tool?
So I've actually used Bumble Biz in the past.
Have you found it?
It's quite good. I mean, I'll say one thing about these sort of professional networking apps, which, you know, they all share in common, not specifically Bumble. It can be hard to get that targeted vertical of people you want to meet, that targeted segment of people you want to meet. Because what I experienced anyway, was that I was meeting people who worked, let's say, like in the makeup industry or in the sports industry. And I'm mostly interested in meeting people in tech and entrepreneurship. That said, I'm sure if I'd used the app a lot more frequently, the algorithm probably would have started to understand my preferences. But yeah, it's definitely a really interesting brand. I love the work that they do for championing female founders and championing women in general. They're also trying to change perceptions around, you know, women. Across all aspects of society. So like I said, I really love Bumble. And what's super exciting is that they have now announced they are setting aside a fund to support female founders. So yeah, this is a fund that's going to invest in other female-founded startups. Less than 4 years old, Bumble is, as a startup.
Yeah.
And they're already doing such incredible things. So really, I just wanted to shout them out and then like raise awareness. So if you're out there looking for some funding and you are a female-led startup, please.
I think they're giving out
help.
Like up to 250 grand of like financing, funding. I would love to know, is it their own money though? Or is it like they're raising a fund? Or are they using the money that they themselves have generated as a company to reinvest into female founders?
So I think that they are literally diverting capital from their own company. From what I read in this Forbes article, they've committed more than $1 million of their own money so far to a Bumble fund. And like you said, they're going to be writing checks from $5K up to $250K, which is also amazing. Because one thing I'll say is if you look at the data on entrepreneurship in general, what you see is that a lot of women create what is called lifestyle businesses. And I know like sometimes lifestyle is interpreted in lots of different ways, but what I mean is
in the tech scene as a pejorative, and I've tried to rally against that for such
a long
time.
It's ridiculous.
Right?
But like, what I mean to say is like, we have, women who are craftsmen or, you know, selling through Shopify, selling through Instagram and all that kind of stuff. And they don't necessarily need that six figures to develop IP or whatever. Yeah. But they do need four figures to grow their market,
working
expand.
Capital, right?
Exactly. So this is really nice to see those smaller checks that support smaller businesses.
Absolutely. I think also it's taking aside just those ramifications in terms of on a macro level, there are so many startups that raise a crazy amount of money that I would like to see more startups use the capital that they have. They probably don't necessarily even need to reinvest into other startups. It's a interesting development where we have startups now investing in startups. And I don't think it's that common. And usually, obviously, you look to VCs or professional investors, right?
Yeah.
So if you're like a WeWork, for example, just throwing them out there and they've raised like $1 trillion. I know they've got their own problems because they've got a lot of overhead. But like, why can't you, like, maybe that does exist already, but why can't they reinvest into other small startups and help the ecosystem in general?
Yeah.
You see what I mean? Like,
you're making such a good point because we've spoken about this before. Obviously, we had Ryan Hoover on the podcast, founder of Product Hunt.
And shout out to Product Hunt.
He runs Weekend Fund. And Michael made this point around, you know, why isn't there a Product Hunt fund? He's like, it's interesting that someone like Ryan Hoover with that crazy deal flow and connection and status within startups has his own fund, but there is no Product Hunt fund. And then Ryan literally tweeted yesterday.
Yeah. I was going to tweet him and be like, yeah, me and Abba talked about this, but I didn't want to, like, I don't know if I was encroaching because that's kind of your company, right? Like, so I was like, it would make so much sense for, like, if you post on Product Hunt and you've just started and you're getting traction, why isn't there a place where I can be like Product Hunt? Like, you know that I'm getting traction because of how many people are liking this. Do you want to invest kind of thing? And it'd make perfect sense.
It does
because,
make sense.
Product Hunt sees all the products of, like, and at their embryonic stage as well. So
based on what I know about tech and startups and investors, my suspicion is one of the reasons why more startups haven't launched funds in the past is because it would have been seen as diverting attention and resources from the core function of the business. And if you think of, you know, four-year-old startup, some four-year-old startups still don't you know, even have, let's say, positive revenue yet, or like,
absolutely,
you know, profit and things like that. So it could be that we're just seeing this trend develop where once you have one startup doing it and the investors aren't complaining, other founders can do it and their VCs won't be complaining at that.
Absolutely, yeah. So if anybody wants us to come aboard for consulting for any of what we've just discussed.
Techish.vc.
Techish, yeah, there we go. Anyways. Speaking of funds, actually, interlinking with what we were talking about before, Andreessen Horowitz has announced that they're doing a fund called Culture. Now, the fund will raise, its LPs will be black celebrities, from my understanding, quickly reading up about it.
Yeah.
Will Smith, Kevin Durant, and a few other notable black wealthy celebrities. And from my understanding, the fund will invest in startups as per usual, but the proceeds, the profits that Andreessen Horowitz will make, will be funneled into tech nonprofits that are focused on diversity and helping people of color get into the tech industry. Now, what are your thoughts? Do you think this is, like, it's obviously laudable,
yeah,
but is it, you know, a drop in the ocean? Like, what, you know, compared to Andreessen Horowitz regular fund. It's kind of just like a little side project, obviously.
Yeah.
And it reads well for a PR. But will it should we just be happy that someone did something? Like, keeping it 100?
Obviously, I'm happy that it's happening. I'm not going to throw shade at anything that supports underrepresented or underestimated communities. But I think one of my personal frustrations with this is that it's a $15 million fund which operates alongside their $1.5 billion. I mean, Crunchbase says that Andreessen Horowitz has $2.7 billion under management. So, I mean, there's some discrepancy there.
Yeah.
But what I get frustrated about is that we know that there are strategic reasons for why funds should invest more in Black founders.
Okay.
They deliver better returns. There's untapped markets. There are blind spots that existing VC are ignoring.
Right.
And I think what's frustrating about this is that it feels more like a marketing move than a strategic move, particularly when you hold it alongside the news that was announced a couple of months ago about their crypto fund, right?
Okay,
So Andreessen Horowitz launched a crypto fund, which was literally $300 million.
There we go.
Okay, $300 million for crypto.
Yeah.
Compared to $15 million for Black founders.
No, actually, I don't think it's $15 million for Black founders. I think it's $15 million which will be raised from Black celebrities, and that the profits will then
be... Right.
The profits for the LPs will go to the LPs, but the profits that Andreessen Horowitz makes will go to...
Non-profits.
So they won't be specifically investing in underrepresented or Black and brown founders. It will just go to the normal set of companies that they will invest in. It's just a way for Black LPs...
So why do they have to siphon that off?
It's a way for them to get... These are not their normal LPs. They have their existing institutional probably LPs.
Mm.
So this is their way of getting, the Black elite, Black celebrities involved in their VC operation. And then a way to say, okay, we will donate all of our profits to Black Girls Code, for example, or, you know, whatever, right?
I'd be interested to know then who will make investing decisions for this fund.
I think it will be then one of their normal partners, and that will be siphoned off slightly. But they will invest in the normal type of companies that they invest in. It's not like backstage capital, basically. That's what we have to make clear. This is not their backstage capital. And what I mean by that, this is not a fund targeted towards underrepresented entrepreneurs. It's a fund that they want to use the profits to do good and help the next generation perhaps come up, the young generation. I don't know.
But it's just interesting because so this is an initiative that doesn't necessarily diversify where capital goes, but rather diversify where it comes from and who gets to participate in VC.
And also where the profits go.
And also
where the profits go, right?
So one really interesting tweet that I saw, forgive me if you're listening because I can't remember who said it, but it was in on the Twitter storm that came out through all of this. Someone was like, I would have rather seen that money go into Arlen Hamilton's fund, which is actually giving capital to Black founders.
Right.
What do you think about that?
So Arlen recently, not recently, a while ago released who her LPs were over the years, right?
Mm.
And Mark Andreessen was one of them. So shout out, I'm not gonna give him a massive pat on the back for that, but like shout out to him. At least he's put his money where his mouth was. And I actually wouldn't have expected that because he's quite libertarian-ish, like politically. So I thought he wouldn't necessarily want to partake in these kind of ventures. So shout out to him. I would definitely would have preferred it if it was they had given it to Backstage or they had replicated Backstage. I made an article out of the Techish podcast that I did with Arlen. And one thing that's great about her is that she's always said, I don't want to be the only one. You know, sometimes it can be very easy when you're doing something and you're getting a lot of prominence out of it to be like, I'm the only one. I'm the, the VC that's doing underrepresented founders. She's like, no, I want it to be multiple VCs doing this. And I want people to look at what I'm doing and learn from it and do what I'm doing, essentially, right? So maybe not give it to Arlen, but I would have preferred if they did their own version of Backstage.
Yeah,
I would have absolutely preferred it. I would have, it would have been a lot better.
I think we need to understand, as you said, all the different angles at which VC and tech need to become more inclusive.
Mm.
Because like you said, yes, this is just about diversifying the LPs.
Right.
And increasing access for that, and then also diversifying the different channels profits can be directed to.
It's no small amount. If they're able to give, 5 million, 10 million to a Black Girls Code, that is not a small amount.
Yeah, of course.
You know what I'm saying? So like, let's say, for example, they invest in the next Uber,
hypothetically
speaking, and those returns are in excess of 10 million, 20 million, 30 million.
Yeah.
That is not a small amount of money
mm.
going to perhaps the next generation of people coming up, right? So maybe I'm being too harsh. And maybe when it comes to increasing diversity, there's different strategies. Some, you know, I think Muhammad Ali was talking about the civil rights movement. I remember watching a video and he was talking about how, you know, in a battle, for example, the Black Panthers would be the ones in the tanks and Martin Luther King is the one in the plane. And there's different strategies you have to take. Not everyone can do the exact same thing.
Exactly.
Right? So, you know, it's commendable, isn't it? So shout out to them. I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Yeah. Twitter sphere, like there's been a few mumblings about Idris Elba being the next James Bond, and it comes up like every now and then. And the last time it was in the news was because I think one of the producers for James Bond was alleged to have said, oh, you know, Idris, he's a bit too street, I don't think we can get him in, you know, to be Bond. And people were like, come on, bro, like if you're gonna use coded language, like at least be clever. Yeah, kind of thing. That's so obvious what you're saying,
racist,
here, like,
yo.
Right, 100%, like so people have been talking about, you know, having a black James Bond. And the argument is actually more nuanced than I thought. Even a lot of people in the black community are saying, like, yo, like, why can't we create our own heroes? Like, why do we have to kind of have the black version of this? Like, even that in itself is, you know, making us seem as if we're kind of like a secondary thought.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, I was of that opinion. Then I saw the reaction from a lot of overt white supremacists.
Wow.
So Richard Spencer, like the alt-right guy, and Katie Hopkins, who are all white supremacists.
Don't
100%,
even mention
right,
her name on this podcast, please.
We'll bleep it out. Anyways, like, they were really up in arms. And I was like, yo, I like these tears.
Taste
tears.
Of your own,
like,
medicine.
Richard Spencer was literally like, oh, like, James Bond, like, you know, he's a symbol of, like, you know, British Empire, white male, European, like, you know, strength.
Empire.
Like, how can we lose that? Blah, 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 blah.
I
was like, yo, maybe this is necessary. Maybe these people, like, I say these people, I mean white supremacists. I'm not, you know, I just mean those specifically. These people
and anybody
who else is back who's rubbed up about the wrong way about Idris being James Bond.
Check,
maybe we need to shove it
yes.
in their face and be like, yo, we're here, we're not going anywhere. And, you know, we can be as British as anything.
Let's change his name. Jerome.
James Babatunde.
Jerome Babatunde. What's up?
Yeah, like, why the F not?
He takes his palm wine, shaken, not stirred.
Basically, right? So it would be like, what's the drink? Oh, fuck, I forgot what I was going to say. What's the most quintessential black drink that we can say? Like, anyways.
Purple drank?
Yeah. No, Scissor. Not lean. I'm talking about
Scissor.
Like...
Scissor.
Nah, man. That's poison. I'm talking about like...
Malt liquor.
No, I forgot it. Anyways, I forgot it.
Rum.
Yeah.
Bourbon.
Rum and Coke. Like, just give me a little rum and Coke. Like, shaking
that
stuff.
Rum and ginger beer.
Yeah, there we go.
Rum and ting.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
So... yeah, I switched my position. I went from, yo, why can't we have our own heroes, to actually, you know what, like, let's let this happen. I don't think it will happen, by the way. I think this story gets like thrown up every now and then as a little
it's clickbait, isn't it?
It's clickbait.
Let's face
yeah.
it. It's
like,
clickbait.
It's clickbait, like
But it's an important point. You can't be what you can't see. We've had this conversation in the past when we talked about Black Panther. The media needs to represent society. We need to see a broad range of people in roles, in inspiring positions, in leadership. And until we do, we are going to perpetuate the stereotypes and perpetuate the cycles. So, you know, even if it's not Idris Elba, Daniel Kaluuya, the other guy, what's the guy in Star Wars? He'd be dope.
Oh, John Boyega.
Yeah.
Malcolm Beckham,
let's
yeah.
get him involved. I mean, you know, yeah. and countless other actors who are on the rise that I probably don't know about yet. But it's an important conversation to have. Let's have it about more people than just Idris.
Yeah, real talk. Real talk. I think, let's see how it plays out. I'm hearing they're going to give
Michael's
to
trying
Hardy.
To throw his hat in the ring. That's
I might do
happening.
This, fam. I might do this. Why not? Why the hell not? I've been to a few weddings this year. Like, I got the bow tie, I looked down. Like, I'll throw my picture. I'll throw my hat into the ring. Why the hell
oh my
not?
Gosh.
I can do
okay,
this.
I'll be Moneypenny.
Yeah, why not? But they've already got, what's her name? Naomi Harris?
Oh, they do? Oh, I love
they
her.
Have,
she's
so they have a black Moneypenny already.
Someone said
right?
I look like her, actually.
Anyways, so... I digress. Could you imagine a black Bond and a black Moneypenny?
That would be so
simultaneously.
No, you know what? No, but come on, let's represent the other races. Let's get an Asian Q. You know Q should be Chinese or
Why?
Japanese.
Why?
Or Taiwanese, because Southeast Asia dominate in the gadgets game, man.
Nah,
all
man,
the top
nah,
gadget
nah, nah,
manufacturers
nah.
come
everything.
From the Far East.
I want all black everything. I want
no,
a whole black.
Man.
I want M to be black.
The rainbow. The world is a rainbow.
No. I want M to be black. I want to have Angela Bassett as M. Yeah, I don't care if she's American. She don't have to even do a British accent. You know, I want to change the whole remit as well. Like, I want him to be like fighting white supremacists. Like, it's like,
yeah, but like, come on, that all the more reason to have Q, who could be like half Taiwanese, half New Zealand.
Let's do the black thing first, then we can fix the other people involved. And I'm joking. Anyways,
race wars, James Bond. Every race to do their own.
Oh my lord. Anyways, next story.
I was just gonna say, while we're shouting out black excellence in UK culture, we should shout out Stormzy and his Cambridge scholarship.
Straight stats, man. Like, Stormzy.
That's it, really.
That's what you want to do. Yeah, so Stormzy, let's give the explanation, because people in America might not even know who he is. So Stormzy's a UK rapper, and basically he's one of our most successful grime artists. And
people know who Stormzy is.
A lot of people don't, you know. Okay. Like, he might be the most prominent in the States, but he's not that well known. So he's basically released like a scholarship for black students from underprivileged backgrounds to go to Cambridge, which is like one of the most esteemed universities in the UK. So shout out to Stormzy. I love
in the world.
Yeah, in the world, sorry. Yeah, you're right. And
everybody knows Cambridge.
He even did like a partnership with Penguin Books to kind of, he done have his own publishing house called Murky Publishing, so that he can get basically underrepresented people into publishing.
Mm.
Because getting your book published is such a like difficult world to navigate, especially if you like, you know, if you don't really see examples of yourself out there, you might not think it's
Speaking
even possible.
Speaking from experience.
Right, cool. And shout out to Slay and Yelaine for doing their thing as well. That's a dope book. Check that out. So I like the fact that Stormzy...
Oh, also Slumflower. She has a book as well.
There we go.
And June Sarpong. Well, we're shouting out black women.
Yeah, there we go. No, Rago. Fuck it. So anyways, yeah, like, shout out to him for using his platform, his success, his money, for going back and saying, let me open more doors. Because not everybody does that. Let's keep it 100. Not every artist does that. And he's at the peak of his fame.
For the record, yeah. So Stormzy was born in 1993.
Oh my God, don't say that.
Which is the same year as my little sis. So, you know, close to my heart. He's going to pay for 2 black British students to go to university of Cambridge, which is, you know, a big, big investment that's going to transform those students' lives.
Yeah.
People were hating. Let's be real. Some people were hating on Twitter.
Do we even want to talk about it?
All I was going to say is, why aren't other celebrities doing that across the spectrum of society? Not even black culture, just in general.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We need to see more passing down of the ladder and opening doors. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree. Here, here.
You got those millies in your bank? Fund some scholarships.
Shadow Wolf, man. I talked about Amazon before earlier in a whole different context, but this one is more about their corporate strategy. So recently I read an article, they're talking about acquiring a cinema chain, a Landmark movie chain, I think that's what they're called. Yeah, Landmark movie chain. No, Landmark theaters, pardon me. And
you're just making stuff up now.
No, because the headline says Amazon is running to acquire a Landmark movie chain.
Yeah
But then the movie chain is called Landmark theaters, which is really confusing for a title. So Bloomberg, like,
shame on you.
Yeah, fire somebody. So anyways, like, what I find so interesting on multiple levels is that Amazon, through their e-commerce efforts, has like shut down so many bookstores and independent booksellers.
I know.
And now they're also going into setting up their own bookstores now themselves, like their own physical stores. So it's so evil. Like, we're going to shut you down because we're doing the e-commerce thing and we're going to pick up the scraps and do our own thing. I haven't been, there is no Amazon bookstore in the UK as of yet, but I would be interested in going into it, checking
that's
out.
That's the thing, I have such a conflicted relationship with Amazon, because like, listen, as a consumer, I love them. I'm
their
on
service
Prime.
Is wild, I'm not going to front, and it's so cheap. When I say wild, I mean in a good sense, like, the service is so cheap, and they,
but then,
the customers
as
always
a business,
put first.
Whew,
yeah.
They make me sweat.
Yeah, I mean, and your former employer as well, like, so with this one, I think they're acquiring the cinema chain, because obviously now they're in a movie business, they make their own movies now as well, right? So this is a way of them getting distribution into cinema to ensure that their films get distribution.
It's weird that you can even do that. I feel like there should be independence between distribution and creation.
So it's funny you say that, actually. So when I read the article, it informed me about something I didn't know, that supposedly there was legislation in place in the States to prevent that from happening. There's no vertical integration allowed between studio and cinema chain.
Right, that
and
makes sense.
And it's been that way for the last 70 years, because I think at one point, my friend, who's a big film buff, he was telling me about how, like, at one point, there were these monolith companies that owned the chain, the studio, everything. And you can imagine what would happen, because if the studio owns the chain, the cinema theater, they can say, we're not showing films from this other rival.
Course, anti-competitive.
Completely, right? So it made sense. Now, apparently, that legislation has been loosened up. Obviously, Trump, every regulation is a bad regulation in his idiotic mind. So if Amazon is allowed to do this, from their perspective, it's really ingenious. I think even to be nominated for an Oscar, your film has to be shown in certain number of theaters.
Yeah.
So this would actually help them do that, I think.
Wow.
I think at
so
the moment,
it's
Netflix
like a
films,
long-term way to legitimize the
absolutely
stuff
yeah
that they make.
Amazon is producing so much content.
I'm so curious to just know, as ordinary consumers, ordinary moviegoers, how does this news make you feel? Like, let's put the business strategic side to just for one second.
Yeah, go on.
Invite the listeners to like comment on your opinions. Like, do you feel that this is a good move for the creative industries and for movies in general? That Amazon, because let's face it, okay, like I love Amazon, I use Amazon Prime, but they will never be called a creative company. Yes, they have the money to hire creative people.
Yeah, but that's what I was gonna say.
Answer me this, Amazon. How do you have the same UI UX for your video streaming service as you do for your site? That is so short-sighted. Y'all need to fix that. That's like crazy.
But we talked about it with the Ryan
Hoover.
I'm scrolling
through Amazon Video just like, this is not how I want to scroll through video content.
Yeah, it's true. Netflix has kind of ingrained us, trained
us to kind
of have
a certain
UI. I don't
want to show up at the cinema and then like the preview start and it's like Amazon homepage and it's like a mouse guiding along here and it's like, Alexa,
but
play movie.
Amazon's entrance into this kind of space, for creatives in general, it's a good thing. Because now, I don't think there's ever been a better time to be a content creator, because now there's so many avenues now where you can get your content made. I know a few content creators that make documentaries and films and stuff, and now they've got so many more people that can bid for their content. Even YouTube now has their own thing, YouTube Red. I don't know if you've heard of it, they've got their own stream platform now that's paid. And I signed up, and the reason why I signed up is because they got a show called Cobra Kai, and I really recommend everybody watch it. It's so sick. It's like a sequel to The Karate Kid. Cobra Kai. So have you seen The Karate Kid?
Of course.
So
wax
Cobra Kai,
on, wax off, man.
Exactly. So Cobra Kai was the bad guys. So this is like now set 30 years later, and it's got Mr. Miyagi's dead. They've got Daniel LaRusso in it, and now it's set from the vantage point of the bad guy. So everybody, if you're a Karate Kid fan, if you're old like me, go watch it. Go watch it. So anyways, the point I was making, though, is that if you're a creator and you've got an idea, you can pitch to YouTube now. You can pitch to Netflix now. You can pitch to Amazon now. And it isn't just the same old TV studios, you know, and these companies are coming in with hardcore cash. So I don't think it's a bad thing. I think Amazon will never be seen as a creative company, but they can be good for creators. It's how I would answer the question.
Super excited because today, thanks to the corporate credit card of Product Hunt and AngelList, I've bought my AfroTech ticket. So in November, I will be in San Francisco. Michael, are you coming?
I'm coming. I haven't bought my ticket yet, but I'll be
there. Come on, man. I'm so excited. Obviously, I've loved watching Blavity Rise. We've spoken about their Series A raise recently. This will be the second year that this festival is running, the biggest Black tech conference, I guess, in the world. I mean, it's in Silicon Valley. I'm really excited because what I've learned through being a part of communities like People of Color in Tech, Hustle Crew, YSYS, list goes on, is that it's so incredible to be all in the room and just feel that positivity.
Yeah.
And feel that energy and help each other and make connections, people that you've only ever seen online or on Twitter or on Medium posts. So I'm really excited about the opportunity to just be under the same roof as all of these people, as well as the big legends. I know like Jesse Williams spoke at it before. Alan Hamilton will be there, Cross Cultural Ventures team. I'm sure the big wigs are going to be there.
Yeah.
So yeah, man, we got to go. We got to do something there, actually. Yeah. What do you think? I don't know.
I'm thinking we need to do something techish.
Techish.
Yeah, maybe office hours or maybe like, I would love to do something
like
that.
Let's throw it out
to
the listeners. What do you guys want? Yeah. What would be cool?
Yeah, maybe a live podcast or something. I don't know. It would be so cool. But yeah, shout out to Blavity. AfroTech is, I think it's a must go. I've never been, and this year I'm definitely going to try and go.
It would be great to connect with the rest of the community. Yeah, let's definitely try and think of some cool techish thing we can do. Listeners, help us out.
So if you're going and you're a listener, hit us on the techishpod at Gmail email, and like we're gonna
that
see.
That rhymed.
Like,
look at you, spin bars.
Yeah, I'm an MC. You know what I'm saying? And shout out to Bobby.
Well, another story that hit the tech-ish sphere. See what I did there?
No, I don't see what you did. What did you do? Sounded like
techosphere, like hemisphere.
Okay,
I'll work on that.
You smart.
Is that YC is coming to China? So Y Combinator, based in the Valley, founded by Paul Graham, Jessica Livingston,
super
Sam
famous,
Altman,
invested in Airbnb, all the big dogs, basically, right? Like the who's who of tech, wigs. Dropbox, everything. Like
it's almost like a rite of passage, isn't it? Like
to
it's
what?
The kind of into like approval and stratospherical success.
Yeah.
How many founders out there want to get into YC?
Absolutely, yeah.
To the point where they had to launch YC Startup School because there's so much
demand. Right? It's the premier incubator accelerator.
I love that. That's such a good way of putting it.
Yeah, it's the premier.
Well, anyway.
How would they describe? They're not an incubator, are they? They are an accelerator slash investor. Yeah.
It's such a great area. At what point does an incubator become an accelerator or an accelerator become an incubator?
Yeah, real talk. So they're going to China.
This is the big story.
Go on.
So they announced just a few days ago, they'll be going to China. They've recruited the COO of Baidu, huge company. I just looked it up. Market cap of $85 billion.
Crazy.
Slice me off a piece of that pie. Anyway, they're launching in China. We've spoken in the past about how China is a hot but borderline impenetrable market for the rest of the tech world.
Mm-hmm.
They've closed off their market to most foreign investment and foreign players with good reason.
They're smart.
We've spoken about this before. Like, respect.
Yeah, they built their own version of so many of the prominent Western companies. And those companies now have massive market caps.
Yeah.
Has its own market of 2 billion people, essentially.
Yeah.
And, yeah, more power to them. I wish Africa would do something similar. We would just be like, yeah, no Facebook. We got our own Facebook. Like,
yeah.
And it's worth 2 billion.
One thing that I think could be really cool about this, the YC way of doing things is very much the startup way of doing things. Like, I don't know if you agree with this, Michael, but when you think of people's first steps into entrepreneurship,
yeah.
They will often be pointed to resources which have been created by YC or YC portfolio companies. So people will often say things like, you know, I'm using myself as an example. Friends told me, oh, you know, read Paul Graham's essays, which I did.
Cool, yeah.
You know, watch those female founder conference videos, which I did. Yeah. Listen to Jessica Livingstone's podcast.
Yeah.
Watch Sam Altman in Startup School. Go see him speak. Watch How to Start a Startup series.
Right.
And what you have is this very specific YC way of doing things and a very YC-driven narrative on how to operate.
Yeah.
Now, while it's obviously been very successful for some of the best names in tech that we know, which you've already mentioned, Airbnb, for example, even Product Hunt was in YC, it's still that very Western world, American, Silicon Valley agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And it is still ultimately VC as well, right?
VC-centric,
so we've spoken in the past
right,
as well, like, are we optimizing for profit or optimizing for growth?
Mm-hmm.
What I think could be really interesting about YC's entrance into China is that it might potentially start to expand its so-called best practices. Because what we've seen in China is people just doing stuff by their own way,
right,
in their own way.
Right.
And really, I think that every region and every founder needs to find what is their best practice and their way of operating. Like, you can look to Silicon Valley for advice and experience, but it doesn't mean that if you apply it in your specific situation, you will be the next Airbnb.
It's a
Airbnb.
Very true point. Because you watching that content in London, it's not necessarily something that is that relevant to you because the VC ecosystem in London is not as well developed. So you probably would, we all would struggle to raise, you know, the figures that they're raising in the States, if anything, because I haven't raised any money. I haven't tried, but, you know, I can imagine it would be quite an uphill and difficult battle. And if you're watching YC-centric content, it's like, yeah, just raise a seed round 200K. And it's like, well, that's not that easy.
Exactly.
But with them going to China, they've got, the lead of YC China is a Chinese national, right? So I think he would be able to center it in a China-centric model, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
It won't. I don't think they're going to go in there and say, this is how we do it in America.
Exactly.
Right. So they've made sure that they recruited somebody who understands the market, who understands, you know, the national mentality and the national ecosystem. It's very smart of YC because, to be honest, you know, is the center of gravity shifting away from the valley? People say no, but if you look at the amount of companies that have come out of China that have billion-dollar market caps, I don't know offhand, but I know there's quite a few of them. That was unheard of 10, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. So if you extrapolate forward, I think a lot of the future AI companies, robotics companies, they won't look like what we would expect them to look like. I think a lot of them will come out of Asia. I don't know if Europe, I think we're lacking behind, unfortunately. I mean, I wish that wasn't the case, but I mean, you know, how many prominent European companies can I name?
Like,
We've got a lot of stuff to sort out. So I think it's quite savvy of YC to do that. I mean, they don't even have YC London or YC Europe, do they?
No.
Exactly, right? So for them to do this, it's obviously them saying, okay, we realize
this is where the future,
this is the opportunity. Very fascinating. I want to do more research into it before I speak any further, because I don't know enough about China. Yo, everyone, thanks for listening. That was episode 20. We'll be back again next week, hopefully. And yeah, leave a review, subscribe.
Use hashtag Techish on social to chat with us.
Yeah, we friendly, we don't bite, we engage.
Share with a friend.
Yeah, all the good stuff. And yeah, lots of love. Ciao.